Money Psychology. Money Psychology.
Every time you reach for your wallet, check your bank balance, or make a financial decision, you're not just dealing with money, you're reliving every money lesson, fear, and belief you absorbed before you were old enough to understand what any of it meant. I'm Elliot Graves, and this is Money Psychology, where we explore how your earliest financial experiences created the money mindset that controls your financial life today. Welcome to Money Psychology. Have you ever stopped to think that the way you handle your money might have less to do with spreadsheets and budgets, and more to do with the lessons you learned on a dusty soccer field or a squeaky basketball court as a kid? It's a powerful thought, isn't it? That our financial playbook might have been written long before we ever opened our first bank account. That is precisely what we're exploring today. We're stepping onto the field to decode the profound and often invisible impact of sports on our money behavior in an episode we're calling The Financial Mirage. And this is a topic that hits close to home for both of us, but from very different angles. For me, growing up as a competitive swimmer, my entire world was about discipline, delayed gratification, and the relentless pursuit of shaving off a millisecond. That mindset, the slow, grueling, consistent work for a future payoff, is so deeply ingrained in me, and I see it reflected in every financial decision I make. That's so interesting. And for me, as someone who spends their life crafting stories, I'm endlessly fascinated by the public narrative of the sports hero. We idolize athletes for their grit, their seemingly overnight success, their ability to perform under immense pressure. I've always wondered, do those same narratives set us up for a boom or bust mentality with our own finances? Are we all secretly waiting for our one championship moment, perhaps to the detriment of building slow, steady wealth? Such a crucial question, and it's just the tip of the iceberg. Today, we're going to unravel that complex relationship between sports, money, and our minds. We'll look at everything from the discipline of a marathon runner to the high-stakes gambles of the professional sports world, and see how these archetypes show up in our own financial lives. We'll ask the tough questions. Is your team player mentality making you a great financial partner, or is it holding you back from advocating for your own needs? And what can the shocking financial falls of sports superstars teach us all about our own vulnerabilities and blind spots? This is going to be a deep and, I think, very revealing conversation. So stay with us as we explore the psychology behind the financial mirage created by the world of sports. It's going to be a fascinating discussion. It really is. And you know, that idea you just touched on, that boom or bust mentality, I think it's the most seductive part of the entire mirage. It's the financial equivalent of the Hail Mary pass. We're culturally conditioned to watch for the miracle shot, not the slow, methodical advance up the field. Yes, the highlight reel. We see the championship ring, we see the confetti, but we don't see the 5 a.m. practices in an empty gym. And I have to wonder, how much of modern investment culture is built on that exact same psychology? People aren't necessarily investing in a company's fundamentals. They're betting on the story. They're looking for that one stock that's going to be the buzzer beater for their portfolio. That is such a sharp observation. It's the difference between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation, isn't it? My swimming was all intrinsic. It was about my own time, my own progress. The motivation was the process itself. But the public narrative of sports, and so often with money, is purely extrinsic. It's about beating the other guy, getting the trophy, having the bigger number. And that extrinsic focus makes you incredibly vulnerable. Because if your self-worth is tied to an outcome you can't fully control, like a market fluctuation or another team's performance, you're setting yourself up for a psychological crash. It's not just a financial loss, it feels like a personal failure. Oh, a profound defeat. And it leads directly to this crisis of what sports psychologists call athletic identity. An athlete, especially at the elite level, often has their entire sense of self, their whole identity, wrapped up in that one role. They are not a person who plays basketball, they are a basketball player. Full stop. And the financial architecture of their life is built on that single, fragile pillar.
Exactly.
So when an injury happens, or when retirement comes, which it does for everyone, and often brutally early, it's not just that the paychecks stop. Their very reason for being, the answer to the question, who am I? And you see the fallout everywhere. The stories of superstars who are broke just a few years after leaving the league. It's not just about lavish spending. It's a complete inability to imagine a second act, because their first act was all-consuming. They never developed an identity beyond the sport. It's a terrifying prospect. And it's a cautionary tale for anyone, not just athletes. How many of us have our identities and therefore our financial confidence tied completely to our job title? To being a successful lawyer or a top executive, right? And when that's gone, through a layoff, a career change, whatever, the psychological disorientation is immense. We haven't been trained to build a diversified sense of self, just like we haven't been trained to build a diversified portfolio. The focus is always on that one primary high-performing asset, whether it's our athletic skill or our high-pressure job. It can even lead to a kind of burnout that's eerily similar, the feeling of being trapped. An athlete might feel trapped by the endless training, the pressure, the fact that their whole family is depending on them. A high earner might feel trapped by the golden handcuffs of a job they no longer love because their entire financial identity is built around that income. That's it. It's the same psychological script played out on a different field, and it makes you wonder, how do you even begin to untangle that? How do you help someone see themselves as more than just their last win, whether that win was on a scoreboard or on a balance sheet? I think it has to start with grief, honestly. You have to allow that person, whether they're an athlete or a CEO, to mourn the loss of that identity. You can't just slap a new label on them and say, okay, now you're a consultant, or now you're a hobbyist. There's a death of a self that has to be acknowledged first. That's a powerful way to put it. We don't think of a career change as something to be mourned. We're supposed to be excited about the next chapter. But you're right. It's a profound loss, especially when that identity brought you so much validation. It's everything. And after that grief, the work is about rediscovering curiosity. It's about asking, what was I interested in before I was the swimmer, before I was the lawyer? Going back to that 10-year-old version of yourself. It's about finding activities where the process, not the outcome, is the reward. It's about learning to be a clumsy, awkward amateur again. Oh, and that is a massive ego blow, isn't it? To go from being in the top 1% of something, where your every move is precise and masterful, to picking up, say, a paintbrush and not even knowing how to hold it properly. The psychological whiplash from that must be immense. It's the hardest part. The humility it requires is staggering, because your brain is screaming, this is inefficient. You're not good at this. Go back to what you know. It's a battle against the very wiring that made you successful in the first place. So you're not just rebuilding a life. You're actively fighting against the ghost of your old one. And I have to ask, does that internal battle then manifest in financial self-sabotage? Do you see people making reckless decisions with money almost as a way to, what, to feel that old thrill again? To try and force a win in a different arena? Oh, frequently. It's a desperate search for that same dopamine hit. If you can't get it from the roar of the crowd, maybe you can get it from a high-risk crypto trade or a speculative business venture. You're chasing the feeling of being in the game, and that chase can be financially devastating because the new game has completely different rules you haven't learned yet. And the skills don't necessarily transfer. The very single-mindedness that makes you a great quarterback doesn't make you a great restaurateur. In fact, it might make you a terrible one because you're not listening to your staff. You're not adapting. You're just trying to run the same play over and over. You're trying to be the hero of the story again. But the new story requires you to be a student. It requires you to be a collaborator. It might even require you to be a supporting character for a while. And that is a role that a lifetime of being the star has not prepared you for. Which brings up the team dynamic. We talked about individual sports, but what about team players? Does that experience of being part of a cohesive unit
of sacrifice for the good of the team create a healthier financial psychology, or does it create its own set of blind spots? That's such a fascinating question, because it's a real double-edged sword. On one hand, yes, team sport athletes often have a better developed sense of trust and collaboration, which can make them great business partners or members of a family financial unit. They understand that a win for the team is a win for them,
right?
But the shadow side of that is a potential inability to advocate for themselves. They can be so used to sacrificing for the team that they do it to their own detriment. They might not negotiate their salary aggressively enough, or they might co-sign a loan for a teammate without thinking, or give money to family and friends to the point of their own financial ruin. Because their identity is wrapped up in being the good teammate, the reliable one who always comes through, and saying no feels like a betrayal of that core identity. It feels like you're being selfish, when in reality, you're just being prudent. It's a complete reframing of financial boundaries.
It's more than a reframing, isn't it?
It's a fundamental identity crisis. Because the very thing that made you valuable to the team, that selflessness, suddenly becomes a liability to your own future. And that really, I think, brings us full circle. When we started, we talked about this financial mirage. And it seems the core of that mirage is this dangerous belief that the rules inside the lines of the sports field are the same as the rules outside of them. They're just not. The game has a clear winner and a loser. It has a final whistle. Life is so much messier than that. There's no single scoreboard. The discipline, the grit, those things are invaluable. And they absolutely transfer. But the single-minded focus on one specific type of win is the trap. That's the trap. Believing that one big score, one championship moment, will solve everything. When in reality, the work is quieter. I think, for me, the biggest insight from our conversation is the power of learning to be an amateur again. The profound humility it takes to go from being an expert to a beginner. I think the antidote to the hero identity is the student identity. That feels like the only sustainable path forward. That's a beautiful way to put it. And for me, I think the lingering thought is about interrogating the stories. The stories the media tells us about athletes, and more importantly, the stories we tell ourselves about success, to consciously choose the slow, methodical advance up the field over the constant hope for a Hail Mary pass. So, it's not just about building a diversified portfolio. It's about building a diversified self, a sense of worth that isn't tied to a single performance on any field.
Exactly.
It's about stepping away from the scoreboard and realizing you were never just the player. You were the whole stadium. The whole time. The next time you make a financial decision that surprises you, whether it's an impulsive purchase or an overly cautious investment choice, ask yourself, whose voice am I hearing? And what childhood memory might be driving this choice? Understanding your money psychology doesn't guarantee better financial decisions, but it's the first step toward making choices based on your current reality rather than your childhood fears and dreams.